I know they have very little in common, but the Bazooka Joe comics that you would eat in the Bazooka.
You didn't eat the comics. And you did. You didn't eat the gum either. You're doing both things wrong.
The Rampant Discourse Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen. I'm joined by my regular discoursers, Travis Hudson and Andrew Riley, and special guest discourser, Gerky. Today we're going to try something a little different. We're going to talk about what media that we've been consuming lately. And that media can be music, movies, TV shows, books, games, any type of game, video game, board game, card game. And hopefully it'll maybe something that we discuss will sound interesting to you all, and it'll introduce you to something that you'll like. So let's start off. Travis, why don't you tell us about the music that you've been listening to recently?
All right. So I have two things, two kind of separate groups. The first one's just real quick listing off a couple of power metal, which is, I liken it to, it's kind of like happy metal. You're not singing about dark stuff or anything. You're usually singing about fantasy and things like that.
The opposite of death metal?
Yeah, you could kind of see it like that, I guess. But two of the ones that I really liked recently were a band called Brothers of Metal. They actually sing about actual like mythology. They sing about Thor's hammer being stolen, and they're kind of goofy. They don't take it too seriously. And then another band,
but more seriously than Witch Taste, right?
I assume so. Yes. and then another one is Mystic Prophecy. Metal Division. I think
Mystic Prophecy, that they have the name Metal in their like album. Or...
Well, I was gonna say I'm pretty sure Mystic Prophecy is the band and Metal Division is the album, but those could certainly be flipped the other way around too, given that. But
fair enough.
They were both on end of 2019 metal lists, which is tend to be how I find new music nowadays. Is at the end of the year, I just Google best of that year and just go down the list and listen to random songs and hopefully find something, and I found those two bands. And I played the Brothers of Metal in the car with the kids, trying to be, here's your lesson on Norse mythology. Like, because they're literally singing about, I think they're going up to Ragnarok, maybe. I don't know. Because what else happened in Norse mythology besides Ragnarok?
Ragnarok hasn't happened yet, so.
I know, but that's like, the story's already been told.
Well, yeah.
The other two bands that I was listening to recently are somewhat related to, and here I'll throw out my accountability that I actually write this article about Green Day's American Idiot and Sum 41's Underclass Hero. And they also both had albums out, I think, last year. I don't know. But Green Day has Father of All, which I think is short for Father of All Motherfuckers. But that's not in the actual title.
You'll have to put an explicit tag on this one.
And then Sum 41 had an album called Order in Decline. And at first I didn't like the Green Day album, Father of All. Until I got to a song, this is funny, until I got to a song called Stab You in the Heart. But I haven't read anything about the production or how they came up with it, but it was totally like 50s style rock and roll.
Sounds good to me.
But with the chorus being, I want to stab you in the heart. It's sort of like Misfits, if anybody knows who the Misfits are.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that, where they're taking a more recent example that no one else will probably know is Horror Pops, where they took like 50s popular type of rock and roll, but they put these way dark lyrics on top of it. So I re-listened to Father of All with that intent in mind. I'm like, okay, now I understand like why they have tambourines and they have like, it doesn't sound like a Green Day album really to me. And at first that threw me off, but now I'm actually coming into it, I guess.
Are we all just going to ignore the fact that Andrew perked up when you referenced that it's like 70-year-old music?
70? No, that's from the 70s. Oh, no, 50s.
50s. 50s.
No, Misfits are 1970s.
So. Oh, but you said it's like 1950s rock, and Andrew's like, ooh,
yeah,
that's my kind of music.
That's his wheelhouse.
That's what I grew up on.
Yeah, that's back from my childhood.
Hey, I listened to Golden Oldies. You probably listened to 104 on the same radio station I did. Until they changed it to Mexican music or whatever they changed it to.
Well, it changed a couple times, but yeah, it was.
Is it called Mexican music?
I realized it's not called that.
That sounds offensive to me. I don't know. Okay.
Moving on. That,
Andrew, do you have any particular music that.
Obviously, I don't have anything new music.
Okay. 1950s, let's go back.
All right. I mean, how far do you want me to go back? I can go.
He's one of the people in the audience listening to Michael J. Fox play Johnny B. Goode and going,
and then I disappear.
No, Michael J. Fox disappears.
But he doesn't. Yeah,
right. All right.
Well, maybe I'm Metallica. All right. I disappear.
All right.
That's modern for me.
Metallica?
No, their Mission Impossible song. That's what reference he's making.
Okay.
Which means late 90s.
Sorry, I don't listen to music, really.
All right. Really, all right, this is going to be quick. Oh, well, I'll share one more thing then.
Okay.
Amazon Music, I guess because I have an unlimited membership right now, they make some weekly playlist based on what you've been listening to. They try to introduce you music. The problem is, on the weekend mornings, I turn on a classical station, and later on, I'll turn on, like, not EDM, but I'll turn on, like, Marshmallow Station or something like that. So all Amazon thinks I listen to is classical music and Marshmallow. So that's, like, all this list is random classical music and random terrible electronica music.
I find the opposite problem, because my musical tastes are quite broad, and the algorithms are confused by how broad they are. They're like, we can't pin you down. What are you supposed to be listening to? We think you like this, and we think you like this, but they have nothing in common, so we can't predict what you're going to like.
So we're both breaking the algorithm.
We broke the algorithms.
My problem is by sharing the account, quote unquote. But all right, Paul, I want to see what music you actually said you listened to.
All right, so I've got two things to talk about. One is, as the parent of two young daughters, I've been listening to a lot of Into the Unknown, whether it be the... Exactly.
I actually considered saying that.
The original,
so which one?
So either the original Idina Menzel or the
Panic at the Disco
one.
Panic at the Disco is the one that he plays the most.
There's also, occasionally I will stream for the girls, the Academy Awards one where they had Idina Menzel and then a bunch of the Elsa voice actresses also singing in their native tongue to various parts of it. So I find myself...
Oh, that's cool. Like when they translate it to other languages, they have... I guess that makes sense, that they have other actresses doing the same roles.
Yeah. And so I find myself humming like Into the Unknown throughout the day and not really realizing it just because I've been listening to it so much. The second thing is kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum, but I recently discovered a series of YouTube videos of Hans Zimmer live in in Prague or something.
There we go.
Or...
waiting for a movie score.
Yeah. From you. And it's pretty neat. Like the videos themselves are kind of neat because they've got like these cellists and violinists and drummers like with these, you know, huge beards and like all dressed up really fancy and kind of showing off for the camera and everything. It's clearly staged for video as well. And the music's awesome. And so it's gotten me back into like a little bit of a Hans Zimmer kick as well.
So one thing though, with the, because we listened to the Frozen 2 soundtrack before we ever saw the movie as well. One thing I was wondering is, do you think they wrote, I bet the answer is no, or I assume so, but it seems like the bands that they picked to redo the songs, like Into the Unknown, Panic at the Disco, and Lost in the Woods, Weezer, like, they sound almost like the bands wrote those songs and then they figured out how to make them for the movie, like, or, like, Into the Woods especially, like, I can't imagine another band besides Weezer doing their version of it.
I don't know, to be honest. I kind of assume that what would take priority is coming up with that earworm, right, Let It Go song to as much as possible. You know, at least for the second
movie.
It seems
to have worked.
Yeah. Well,
although I don't know because I don't know what you guys are talking about. So
it has sparked.
Wait,
it has sparked.
You haven't watched it? You have three daughters.
I have not seen Frozen 2. I have not heard the soundtrack.
But you have three daughters.
Yeah, but
and weren't you just on a Disney cruise?
And they all at least used to like dressing up as Disney princesses.
Yeah. I work.
But Andrew doesn't like to dress up as a Disney princess.
Are you sure?
That we know of.
Are you sure? Sure about that? How confident are you in that statement?
About 70%.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to hijack Paul's job as host and move us to the movie category because my movie was Frozen 2, which we just watched last Sunday night, I think.
Oh. I had you beat.
We were supposed to watch, so we got it on Blu-ray because it just came out on Blu-ray like, what, a week or two ago. And we were supposed to save it for our daughter's 5-year birthday. But that clearly didn't work because somehow I think she saw another Target bag and was upset. No, she didn't get anything. So my wife had to give her Frozen 2 early for it, which fine. But so now we finally saw that movie, like whatever.
What did you think?
The Great Debate, is it better or worse? I liked it, but I still think the first one was more powerful, I guess. Like,
I think the first one was more, it played with tropes more and
right,
was
I
more
think,
unexpected.
I think because the revelation of true love was more unexpected, especially for what to that point, which Andrew should, you've seen the first Frozen.
Yes.
Like, was,
cover your ears.
Was like a, right, up until that point was a much more traditional Disney movie. Up until the point Hans puts the fire out.
Yeah. Says, I'm not going to kiss you. I was going to say, even the Hans twist is well, unexpected, I would right. say.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I guess there were, the fact that there were also two swerves.
Yeah.
It's not Hans, it's not Kristoff, it's sisterly yeah. love, which I remember, Andrew, your wife, I think, liking that part of it, because you have three daughters liking the fact that it was sisterly love versus romantic love. But you're not on Facebook, so you probably didn't see her talk about that. So
we know your wife better than you, is what we're saying.
Apparently.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and oh, so, but I was hoping Andrew had seen it so he could answer some of my questions about it a little bit.
Why would Andrew answer the questions?
Because it's about, I got a very strong Lord of the Rings vibe from Frozen 2. The water knock reminded me of in the midpoint of Fellowship, where like they use the water and it forms horses or something like that. But that's just where my mind goes when I see a water horse, is that scene from Lord of the Rings. But also, Elsa basically turns into Gandalf the White. She's dead, like she's dead, everybody thinks she's dead, and then she turns white and gets more power and comes back and like
I'm just gonna be over here drinking for a bit.
Yeah.
So I don't know, that's just my association, I assumed.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
Meanwhile, I totally thought Moana. Like, you see see Elsa and the waves, and I'm like, Moana.
One of the songs, I think, maybe even had a Moana vibe to it, I think. Weren't they singing?
The intro song sounds a little Moana-ish to me.
Yeah.
Which one?
I'm not going to sing it. I don't think. No. What but just it? Like, no, so, it's not one of the ones with words. It's just kind of sounds like a tribal song. That reminds me of some of the music in Moana that's not with words, or with English words, I should say.
Also, what I found interesting was we had read multiple book versions of Frozen 2 before watching it. We read the Little Golden Book and like some other, we read a bunch of media tie-ins. And interestingly, they all stopped without giving away the ending. They would like stop with basically where they had split the party.
Okay.
Where like they're all separate from each other. And they're like, and then Anna saw something that solved all the mysteries. The end. I'm like, I'm glad you didn't spoil the movie, but that's a crappy place to end this book.
It's because they wanted to publish the books before the movie came
right.
out.
Right. So I don't know if they're going to ever do, like, now they have to, like, publish books with the ending in it. I don't know what their plan is.
Oh, no. You'll have to buy two books from Disney.
Oh, no. I know. But, and something like Frozen's going to be evergreen at this point. But, like,
people which is ironic because it's Frozen.
But people were saying that they, how much money did they lose by not having little baby Yoda stuff ready to go?
Yeah.
Right at Christmas when that was coming out.
Still probably going to be hot this Christmas based on what I'm seeing.
Well, and also they're going to have Mandalorian Season 2 is supposed to be out by then. So hopefully that'll bring people back.
Yeah, teenage Yoda.
I saw them bringing back Furbies with Yoda. It's like, did not need that.
So anyway, Frozen 2 was my movie.
That was actually mine also, so I'm jumping ahead just because of that. We rented it on Wednesday, and then my kids were sick on Thursday, so I watched it twice on Thursday and once on Wednesday.
Was that your first time?
No, we saw it in the theater.
Oh, okay, yeah. So we hadn't seen it in the theater.
Yeah, no. We just like, I feel inundated with it. And then we actually watched Frozen 1 last night as well, so I'm like all frozened out.
We had watched Frozen 1 the weekend before, and because we were trying to figure out what to watch like during lunch, usually on like Saturday or Sunday lunch. I'm like, let's watch something. And I think my daughter's literal words were, let's watch Frozen. We haven't seen it in a week. Like, okay.
Disney is loving this.
Yeah, that's why I'm a shareholder. Yeah. Make sure to sign up for Disney Plus.
Speaking of Disney Plus, okay. And also to completely confirm everything that you guys have as suspicious about me, I want to talk about a Disney movie from 1991.
I was going to say, how old is it?
Is it the one I just watched based on your recommendation? No, that was not 91.
Was Aladdin? No.
I don't know.
I watched The Goof.
No, that was older than 91.
We had a family movie night recently, and we were going to watch something on Disney Plus, and so I narrowed the choices down to make it easier, and my eldest daughter was the one who was finished with all her chores first, so she got to pick out the movie. So I said, pick from these three movies. And the one she picked was The Rocketeer.
What was the most recent movie that you offered her to pick from?
Maleficent.
That's fairly recent.
Yeah, give him credit.
Okay.
But she chose The Rocketeer, which I was really happy about, because Rocketeer was my favorite movie from 1991, from our Favorite Movies of the 90s, or Best Movies of the 90s podcast series.
Yeah, go back and listen to those podcasts if you haven't.
And rewatching it with the family was pretty awesome because it still holds up. It's really good. Although, also, I've learned since I've seen the movie the last, which has to be going on 20 years, I've learned an awful lot more about the history of World War II and Nazism. So some of those points, the plot points, fell flatter than I expected.
Wait, was the hero like a Nazi or something?
No, the villain's a Nazi.
Okay.
But
that seems...
That's fine. Okay. But, you know, it's
done. I don't know much about Nazis, but I think they make good villains.
They do. They make great villains, which is why they're everywhere for these kinds of things. Yeah. But there's nuances and pastiches. Like, you know, the vast majority of America was not anti-Nazi. Hmm. And the vast majority of Hollywood especially was not particularly anti-Nazi, especially at the time when this movie was representing. And yet everyone, because it's a movie of the 90s, is like, oh yeah, Nazis are the worst thing ever.
Right.
So the actual villain is probably more in keeping with what 1940s Hollywood would have been like then, 1930s Hollywood would have been like then the actual movie was. So it's like, you know what? He might have been onto something.
Hmm.
Not a good guy. Still a bad guy. Doing bad things, but...
So you were sympathetic with the Nazi villain is what you're saying.
Definitely.
Gotcha.
Definitely not what I was saying.
Gotcha. Clear. Clear as day.
But the one of the other villains, his muscle, this brute of a man called Lothar, he comes on screen, and I loved this character when I watched the movie when I was younger, but he scared the crap out of my six-year-old.
Oh, yeah?
So that was pretty impressive watching that, you know, relatively tame movie and seeing it through the eyes of kids and all these things. And I still like that movie quite a bit.
That's been my concern about showing what they're almost 8 and almost 5. Anything like that I remember fondly from my childhood, like even Karate Kid,
because
like I can see like the beach scene where they're in skeleton costumes and beating up Danny. I can see that scaring, especially the 5-year-old, or like even Star Wars. There's not that much, but there's probably going to be something like the trash compactor scene. It's probably going to be pretty scary or intense.
You have to have intensity in movies, and right. I think that it's, you know, Frozen is all fine and good, but you need to have those moments of intensity too. And so she gets scared, and she goes curls up with Mom, and we watch more. And then she comes and curls up with me, and we watch the rest. And so she got through it.
Yeah, to the point of Frozen 2, like, we didn't watch it in the theater because when she saw the trailer and they had the Earth Giants walking, she slept in our room for 2 weeks just from the trailer.
Oh, wow.
And during the movie, she did get scared. But yeah, she just snuggled in with somebody and then saw that they were helping Anna, spoiler, but then got past it. So
that's the spoiler. Not she's dead.
I don't know if they're really helping her.
Well, they were trying to kill her.
She's using them. Yes, but that's why then she sees what they're actually doing.
Like I'm so confused right now, and I understand this.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You'll see it eventually.
I'm sure I will.
Anna's dead. Don't worry about it.
Spoiler alert.
So I also have another movie I can talk about. That's another Disney movie.
All right.
I saw the Rise of the Skywalkers in a theater-like setting.
It's singular.
Rise of the Skywalker. That actually makes a lot more sense. Most of that in the movie.
There's no "the"
the movie.
It's Rise, isn't it? It's
just Rise of the Skywalker. Skywalker. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Title is bad.
All right.
Movie.
Just say also, just say episode 9.
Episode 9. Title bad. Movie bad.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get much disagreement around the table.
8 was really bad.
See, that's where we disagree, but yeah.
9 was also bad. I think 9 might have been a better movie than 8, but the problem is that 9 has spent so much time trying to fix all the things that went wrong in 8 that it wasn't a movie anymore.
Well, and just the mere premise, and now I see that they're trying to retcon that, or not even retcon, but like they're trying to use like online media to try to answer people's questions. Was the Emperor a clone? Was he not? Like, what? You didn't explain anything.
So I heard something about this, and this may be a tie into one of our next subjects, but apparently they put crucial plot points for the novel. Not just into the novel.
In Fortnite.
In Fortnite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you needed to have played Fortnite to have understood the plot of 9.
Like, the Emperor broadcast a message to the galaxy saying, ha, 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 I'm back, or something. Well,
I don't know the details, but...
But, like, you get that in the crawl. I think the opening crawl said, like, you know, the Emperor has announced his return. And you're like, well, sure, don't show us that. Yeah. Or even tell us what was in the message. Yeah, but I guess they had assumed everybody plays Fortnite. All the kids do.
Well, there is more to life and movies than kids.
It's pretty incredible that considering how massive it is that Emperor Palpatine mysteriously comes back. I guess that's a spoiler. I don't know. Like, they don't explain it pretty much at all. Like, they don't even confirm that he's a clone, really, in the movie.
Yeah.
It's implied, at least.
That,
but
that, I think, bit of information explains, because the opening scene is Kylo Ren flying to Exegol to meet the Emperor. Right. I'm like, how the heck did he know where to go to find the Emperor? But apparently that was in the message, was like, I am back. We will launch from Exegol, blah, blah, blah. And good luck finding it, because you have to have a Sith holocron.
Well, he is Sith. Wayfinder. You know, there's completely tons of reasons why he might know about these secret Sith books that was passed down from Sidious. Or whatever his name was. I don't know.
I don't even know who you're talking about now.
So there's plenty of reasons why he would know this. And
Kylo?
Would, yeah, Kylo would know those things. So I could buy that. And the worst part is, I went to go see the movie. I missed the opening crawl. I came in and he's flying the spaceship. So I was even more confused than the average moviegoer at that point. But I catch up with pretty
much. I don't think there's much more in the opening
crawl. There really wasn't. I was like, no, I'm going to be fine. But that is not a good movie.
It wasn't like the opening crawl to like Phantom Menace where like you had to read that to know like Trade Federation and taxation and what's going on now? Why are they talking to Gunray or whatever his name is?
Gunray. Yeah.
So I think that 9 could have been a much better movie if they didn't try and cram 2 movies into 1.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on record as saying they needed a singular force behind all 3 movies.
I agree with that 100%.
See what you did there.
Yeah, a singular may the force be with you. Now, it's very clear that the person who directed 1 and 3 mm-hmm. was not the person who directed 2. And they had very different ideas on where to take things. And 2 spent a lot of time undoing 1, and 3 spent a lot of time undoing 2.
Which is weird, because when Disney first bought Star Wars, or Lucasfilm, I thought one of the big things they did when they decanonized the entire extended universe was, we're going to have a story team, and we're going to make sure the movies and the games and the comics and the books and everything line up together, so everything works together.
Yeah.
And then they can't even do it with the main movies. Like, so what, I guess that team doesn't exist or something, or they care more about the comics or something. But
I don't know.
We have mentioned an awful lot of Disney movies.
Yeah.
Are there any movies these days that aren't Disney?
No,
they bought everything.
There are no restaurants except Taco Bell.
Well, we ate at a restaurant recently that wasn't a Taco Bell.
Although I was going to suggest Taco Bell. There you go.
There you go.
I had it for dinner last night. Yeah.
Someone out there will understand my reference. And that
oh, no, we understand your reference.
I don't.
Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes, man. Like,
all right, should we move on to TV?
I gave the answer to Gherky on his reference. There you go.
Yeah. TV? Did you want to mention any movies?
No. So this is weird. I'm usually movie guy, but I can't think of any
movies. There hasn't been a Marvel movie out in the past few months, is why.
Yeah. I'll probably see Black Widow, but yeah, there.
That's fine.
I can't think of one.
Yeah, we were talking about going to see Birds of Prey, but we never made it.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And no one else did either.
I'm about to say, Slice, they had to retitle the movie. It's no longer Birds of Prey and then like the long title. It's now like Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey.
Oh, really?
Because they realized people don't know Birds of Prey, they know Harley Quinn, so they needed to put it up in the front, yeah.
Interesting.
But it was too, yeah, like Paul said, damage had been done. You go past your first weekend, that's all your money.
Yeah. So TV shows, Travis.
We said, I think beforehand we agreed this would also include streamings. Some, like, I know Andrew said Disney Plus, but like, the reason I say that is because the one thing that I've personally been watching, I watched one episode of Lock and Key on Netflix. I just don't have time to watch something like that I can't watch without my finger on the button in case a kid walks in the room because they're going to be terrified of a show. So I don't tend to watch...
What kind of show is Lock and Key?
Well, it's based on a Joe Hill comic book series. But yeah, like even just the first episode like has this voice down a well that the little boy is talking to. And I was like, no one else in my family is allowed to watch this show because they would be terrified of just this one part of it.
They're all going to be sleeping in your bed.
The conceit of the show is something that this family inherits a house. Their last name is Locke, or their last name is Key, or somehow there's two families named Locke and one named Key. I've only watched the first episode. I never read the series.
It's like the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper.
But yeah, so the house is full of all these keys that all have magical powers, and I only saw like one of the keys. So, I think it's 10 episodes long. It's one that I'd looked forward to, but like I said, I don't get to sit down and watch 45-minute long episodes without life interrupting me.
Life or wife?
So, both. So, the thing that I have been watching is on YouTube, because you can watch 5 to 10 minutes at a time. So, I've been watching the Dice Tower for their board game reviews. So far, I've mostly been watching reviews of games I already play. But I partially do that so that I can see where I agree and disagree with these people, so that when I do watch something that I haven't played, I can know, get a better feeling why I should agree with this person's opinion or not. But I've also been watching it because you guys have suggested possibly doing something with board games on here. So I'm trying to get ideas from how they do video of board games and talk about things.
Yeah, pulling back the curtain a little bit, we've been talking a lot about maybe doing an ongoing series, not necessarily consistently, but just when the fancy strikes us, if that's a saying, if even if it's not, to do some sort of board game review, or even not even a review, just like talking about a board game, in particular Ticket to Ride, Settlers of Catan, Power Grid, whatever it may be, and who might enjoy it, and the pros and cons, basic things, how many players, how long it takes. Haven't figured out a great format for it, but that's something that we've been talking about. One thing I wanted to touch on real quick, you were talking about not having a lot of time to watch things. Have you checked out something called Quibi? Or have you heard of something called Quibi?
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. How have I heard of this?
I have no idea.
So what is it?
It's the whole claim.
Wasn't it on a YouTube Super Bowl? Super Bowl ad, I think.
Probably.
That's how I heard about
the,
it.
Okay. The whole claim to fame of it is like short 5 to 10 minutes.
10
or 20, 15, 20 minutes. Videos. Like, that's the full story. Okay. Like, it's, I don't know. Yeah, it's basically for short consumption.
Okay, so I was on, I don't know if you know who Brené Brown is.
Nope.
She's some, I don't know if motivational speaker would be the right name for her or not. Anyway, she was on the Tim Ferriss podcast, and she said instead of watching movies at home, like, she'll actually just watch, like, you know, half an hour worth of movie trailers and be totally satisfied with it. Mm. And I actually can totally understand that, because I can watch a movie trailer, or like Netflix has the trailers for all their stuff now, and like, mm-hmm. I can just wander around on the net. I think I've said this on air before too. I can just wander around that and like watch all the trailers on Netflix for like 20 minutes and be like, well, I didn't actually watch anything, but I'm satisfied with what I watched.
I don't think it's uncommon sentiment. I've seen that on social media before, where people are like, you know, you go onto Netflix expecting to watch a movie, and an hour later you realize you've just been watching trailers, and you just turn it off and go to bed.
Yeah. Or so, like, that's been the complaint about movie trailers for years now, is that they show too much of it.
Yeah. And there's too many in front of movies, too.
Because, like, to cite Andrew's favorite movie from 1992, T2's trailer famously didn't... He's giving me this dead eye look. think that, you know, T2 didn't give away its spoiler, which was, like, the entire movie, but they managed to not give it away. Well, as now you can't see a trailer without
knowing. I thought it did.
Did it? It
was like, he's back for good.
Okay, so it's even that old.
Yes.
That, like, they've been giving away key plot points of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, the trailer that reveals slowly is hard to do, while also making the movie interesting and engaging, and you want to go see it. What's going to spark the person's curiosity to say, oh, I want to go see this movie, without giving them plot details, it's very hard to do sometimes. So you need to have those action sequences. You need to have something that grounds them. And that's one of the reasons why series movies have a little bit more success with that. They don't want to give the spoilers for the series mm-hmm. movies, but also they don't have to give as much background information.
You can just say the Emperor's going to be there and not explain it in the trailer or the movie, too. So
I'm shocked The Matrix did as well good of a job as it did in making people interested in seeing the movie without mm-hmm. giving any idea about what it was about. So, credit to The Matrix. Do you have any others, Travis?
Nope. Yeah, like I said, like, I don't have that much. I say not much time. To your age-old point, I don't make it a priority to watch TV shows, I guess.
How could you?
How could you spend time watching TV shows when there's other things to be done?
Also a valid point.
Which, do you have a TV show?
I have no TV shows.
Okay, that sounds like a great lead-in for you have no TV shows.
I have no TV shows. I could talk about TV shows, but nothing's current. Not even close.
He's going to talk about The Prisoner, Gunsmoke.
You want to talk about Leave It to Beaver?
Yeah. You're too busy writing your fitness check-in, right? All right.
So I guess that leads into mine really well, actually. You said nothing's current. Are they supposed to be current shows?
No.
I kind of asked about binging.
You're watching
so recently. I have started binging The Next Generation.
Star Trek, specifically.
Yeah.
Not like Degrassi, The Next Generation.
No.
And this stems back from Picard, right?
Yes, because...
Do you guys have CBS All Access?
We do right now. Uh-huh. I've heard good things about Picard. And then Paul's like, well, you need to know what's going on. And so...
You probably don't.
I feel like I'd probably be fine.
Well, to be fair, I gave her a list of like these five episodes sound like they're important. It was like, and she's 10 like, I'm going to watch all seven seasons. I'm like, or you could do that.
Also, Aaron had started watching The Next Generation first and had commented on really enjoying it. And then Picard came out and people were talking about it and how you really need to watch some of Next Generation first. So I started watching it. And so I've been kind of binging that. You guys all know a lot about that series, I assume. No? You didn't watch it?
I was just about to say, like, the only time I ever watched any Star Trek was when Next Generation was on in, like, the Firehouse Rec Room when I would be there kind of as, like, a de facto babysitter when I was a kid.
Okay.
So, like, I recognize Picard, obviously. I recognize Riker. I could, mm-hmm. if, I don't even know if Data's in there or not.
Yeah.
Geordi.
I always get her the numbers wrong. Oh. 7 of 9?
She's not Next Generation.
Oh, but isn't she in Picard? Or there's somebody that looks like her. Yeah. So, like, yeah, she's not. But see, I know even more than Next Generation. So I can recognize some of the characters from it because I've been friends with Paul for all these years. And I had other friends back in elementary and middle school who liked the show. So, yeah. I think I watched like the first episode of Next Generation. Because that's right.
It's, ooh, that's a bad one.
Isn't it
Encounter
the series?
Farpoint,
isn't it bookended? Yeah, like yeah. Q, and then like you always say. Then at the end, they're like, "Oh yeah, remember the first episode?"
Spoiler alert! Come on.
Okay. Well, then anyway, so the other series that I've kind of been watching is called The Genius, and this is a Korean game show, and it's actually pretty cool. So, you guys all know Vinny and Aaron, and they both have watched it, and Vinny kind of was like, "Hey, Garky, I think you'd like this." It's one that you pretty much have to watch online. It's not streamed on any of the main services or anything.
Do we need a VPN?
No, you can just download episodes.
It's not streaming.
There's a thing called the internet.
It's
been around since the 50s.
You actually download the episodes onto your computer. You can't watch them live on them.
But what's the source?
I actually don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I just Googled it and found places. Look that shady, but they might be. I don't know.
It might give you a virus. Who knows?
So I'm going to torrent the episodes.
It's not like a regular torrent site or anything.
Okay.
Is this legal or do I have to like scrub this?
I think it's legal.
All right. We think it's legal. Is that good enough for our lawyers?
You're not doing anything that you know is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mens rea, I mean, right?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So it's a puzzle game, basically, where they start with, I don't remember if it was 13 or whatever, but Koreans who are known for certain things. Like, one of them might have, like, written a famous comic. One of them is a well-known pool shark who wins a lot of money at that. One's a video game star. One's a K-pop person.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they put
13
them in.
Different ones from different categories.
Yeah, they have them in different categories, and then they'll have different...
Not 13 from each
puzzles.
Category.
No. They have 13 people total, or okay. something, about that number. And they'll have different puzzles where, you know, one of them is like, oh, two people are zombies, the rest are humans, right? And you get a hidden card. And then you have to, over the course of 5 rounds, shake hands with certain people.
Celebrity werewolf.
Similar, except they do it in separate... Well, I've never seen Celebrity Werewolf, but...
It's a thing I just made up.
Yeah, it's kind of like that idea, except they're trying to solve the problems as you go. And then whoever wins the problem, right, or the mm-hmm. puzzle... gets to keep someone else safe, and whoever loses gets to pick someone to face in the death match, right? Which is who gets someone kicked out.
Okay.
And then over the course of it, they gain these garnets, which is worth a million of whatever the currency is there. And so, like, the amount of money that's at stake is changing over the course of the game. And so you have the option to kind of optimize how you play to get the most money out of the producers, or... to try and kind of secure your place. And so there's a lot of different elements going on, and it's interesting, and they have completely different puzzles each week.
So it's a lot of fun with game theory and then psychology and personal interaction with the actual game and puzzles on top of it. That does sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's like a gamified Korean Survivor.
Kind of, yeah. But it's all games, so it's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you make deals with people, and then, you know, they backstab each other. Because,
of course, he will.
You know, yeah, you got it.
Remember that, anyone who plays diplomacy with Kirky.
And I've only played that once. Paul's the one who's
Paul's a backstabber, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's how you play.
That's how you play. I'm not complaining. I'm just stating a fact.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a pretty good show. And I've only gotten to like episode 7 of the first series. I know that they've got like 5 seasons, I think. And actually, I've heard that the people who are in the first season come back in some of the subsequent seasons. So, like, I know Aaron's watched it at least a couple times for all of them. And yeah, they really like it. They've seen a bunch of different Korean game shows, I guess. They have got really good game shows over there.
Can you tell me the name of the show one more time?
This one is The Genius.
The Genius.
Yeah.
Is that all of yours?
I mean, I have other ones that I watch, but they're kind of not things I'm binging, like NCIS, Hawaii 5-0, Station 19.
Nothing interesting.
The Rookie.
Okay.
They're all fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You guys said to try and keep it to, you know,
a couple. Talk too much.
Okay, I'll shut up.
Just enough.
I'll shut up.
I see scenes of The Rookie when my wife watches it. The thing I don't like about that is, like, the gimmicky body camera footage.
Oh, yeah.
It, like, really bugs me whenever I see a scene of
the body cam that. Footage isn't great, but yeah, I like the idea of, like, you know, he gets to a certain point in his life and he's like, ah, I'm going to find a new career. I'm going to start over. And, you know, not just sucking at it.
Normally I would watch a Nathan Fillion show, but I don't know. I'd rather just rewatch Castle, probably.
I watched Castle a lot. Yeah.
Castle was good for about 5 seasons.
I don't know where it streams. I haven't seen it. I looked at it at one point.
It was originally on CBS, so it might be on CBS All Access.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't always have CBS All Access. We just happen to have it right now, so. But yeah.
So is Paul going to say Picard then?
Well, no. So similar to Travis, I actually have a hard time finding time for TV shows. I guess I don't prioritize them.
Making time.
Unless it's a show that I can watch with my wife. So mm-hmm. Picard is definitely on the queue, but it's on the queue waiting.
Waiting for me to.
Yeah, see? Queue? He got it.
Well, that's one reason I can watch the Dice Tower, because I watch it with my son.
Okay.
He'll watch the board game stuff.
So we haven't started Picard yet. The Witcher, we watched the first episode on Netflix. Did not seem to be popular with the wife.
Yeah, and I don't watch it.
If I ever have time to watch a TV show on my own, which is probably never going to happen for the next couple of years, I might try and pick that up again, because I've heard good things about it.
Lots of coins in The Witcher.
Yeah.
Not that I've seen it.
Haven't even gotten that song yet. And I would kind of like to give it at least one more episode or two to see if it gets better. But the one TV show that we have watched a lot together, and haven't watched it for a little bit, but it's The Good Place. Mm-hmm. I had started watching it kind of on a whim one morning when I rarely had some free time, and I remember hearing some good things about it, and I enjoyed it. It was, you know, funny and kind of smart too at the same time. You know, it's rare Christian to have.
Bell's kind of awesome.
Frankly, I like Chidi as well. Names escaping me of the actor who plays Chidi, but and Ted Danson is well cast there as well. There's a lot of good acting.
Yeah, the only problem with the first season, at least right now, is the outdated Blake Bortles jokes.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because they actually address that as a series.
So yeah, we saw most of through the second season, I think.
Okay.
So I saw, yeah, I guess we're trying to avoid spoilers for it because...
Yeah, I intentionally was kind of trying to avoid... There are some very interesting twists, and apparently the end of season one twist was, like, huge.
Right, I was about to say, like, you said it was smart. It was, I mean, it was smart, but, like, it's almost like a retroactive smart. Of, like, once you get to the end of the twist, the twist at the end of episode, blah, 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 season one,
yeah,
you can kind of be like, oh, and look back, which is how a good twist should be.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, now like, some of this other stuff makes more sense.
It's much better to have a twist like that where you look back and be like, oh, this does make sense throughout, rather than be like, they just made that up at the very end.
What if they're up to 4 or 5 seasons now?
Oh, it's over
it's
now.
It's over.
Well, okay, but how many did they get?
4.
However many they got, I was shocked that it could actually, after that twist, I was shocked it could actually last past even like season 2. I was like, as good as season 2 still was, I was like, this seems like it's going to have to run out, but so it doesn't surprise me that they only got 4 seasons.
Yeah, and I think they decided to voluntarily, like, I don't think they were forced off the air. They're like, this is a good place to stop. I think it was probably a smart idea. It always moved a little faster than I expected. Like, there were times when, like, I expect them to draw this out longer, and they didn't, to their credit. Mm-hmm. It's pretty compact. They have a lot of interesting things, like talking about the trolley problem, which is rare to see in a network sitcom.
Literally.
I was waiting and waiting. Now I gotta come in. Make me smarter.
Okay.
What is this?
What is what?
The show. Yeah.
The show?
Just, the Good Place. I have no idea what station it's on. I don't know anything about the people ABC, that you're talking about.
NBC, I think.
NBC, yeah.
It's a half-hour sitcom.
It's on Hulu. On That's NBC. How I watched it. Yeah.
It started, I guess, four-ish years ago. Mm-hmm. It stars Kristen Bell? Kristen Bell?
Yeah.
Veronica Mars.
Ted Danson.
Ted Danson. And
other
a couple
people.
Of newcomers. The basic premise is Kristen Bell wakes up and she's in the afterlife. And Ted Danson says, welcome to the good place. You know, when people die, they go to the good place or the bad place. And there's very rarely mentioned heaven or hell. It's just a good place and a bad place. And he's like, I'm so happy that you're here. And Kristen Bell, the viewer finds out very, very quickly that there has been a mistake.
Kristen
Bell was an awful, awful person.
Yeah.
And they confused her with somebody else.
Who had the same name.
And like apparently, you find out later, died the exact same time. So there's a little bit of a mix-up. And she does not belong there at all. But nobody knows that but her. And that's the premise of the first episode. At the end of the first episode, she meets her soulmate, Chidi. And she confides with him very early on that she doesn't belong there. And he's a professor of ethics.
Was he a soulmate before she died?
No. It's something that's
So they said that, you know, there are soulmates, and now that you're in the good place, you will meet your soulmate.
Yeah, because that's how you...
For the rest of eternity.
And so there's a lot of interesting, like, philosophical things and ethical things, and it doesn't really follow any particular religion or anything like that. It's just kind of all a made-up thing, which is why I'm really disturbed by this.
He does. He looks very disturbed.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to follow along. I'm taking in a lot right now.
I mean, I would suggest if you had the time, I would suggest at least giving the entire first season a try.
You basically have to watch the entire first season.
If you're not willing to, maybe give the first three episodes a try. And if you're not willing to set out the entire season after three episodes, it's probably safe to drop. Because the humor is pretty consistent after those three episodes. And the humor, I think, is what keeps people coming back, even if they haven't gotten to the twists and a lot of the more philosophical episodes.
But I needed you to slow that down for me because I had not heard of any of these things.
Yeah, sorry.
And I don't know these actors or actresses. And
you don't know Veronica Mars?
I know of the show Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Just don't watch the reboot or fourth season. I don't know. I didn't hear good things about the fourth season.
Veronica Mars. Oh, the new Veronica Mars season.
Watch the original three seasons.
I think something came in on Netflix for my wife, and
there was also a movie that did
Veronica Mars.
Yeah,
I don't. We don't. We've never had Hulu, so it wasn't that. But I also could be confusing for another series that has a very similar premise. Similar to me, in that it could be completely different.
Well,
not The Good Place, but Veronica Mars.
The Good Place, the first couple seasons are available on Netflix, last I checked.
Don't have Netflix anymore.
Okay. NBC, it might be available streaming for free, but I don't know if the first couple seasons are or not.
You can probably get them on or DVD Hulu and hand crank your DVD player to watch them nowadays, too.
I'm pretty sure he's VHS.
So, Betamax, all the way.
You can actually buy VCRs again now. I don't know why.
It's like turntables. They came back in style.
Can you buy videotapes to put in said VCRs?
I'll sell you some of mine.
Okay, yes, we have some, but... Okay.
So one thing that I thought was really funny about The Good Place, and it's not actually about the story at all, but one of the characters, Tahani al-Jamil, mm-hmm. The actress who plays her is named Jamila Jamil in real life. So her character is Tahani al-Jamil. Her real life name is Jamila Jamil. She went to the Golden Globe Awards, and they labeled her name on it for where you're supposed to put, like, the name of the actress, Camila al-Jamil, which is her sister in the show. Right? It's not even, like, her in the show.
Yeah.
It's her sister who's, like, a bit character
every
so often. And so, like, it seems like that had to have been done on purpose by someone. But I don't know. It was just, like, it was interesting. I was like, wait, what?
And you can watch this one legally, unlike The Genius.
I think it's legal.
If there's no copyright in the United States, it's perfectly valid.
Yeah.
If it's copyrighted in Korea, it's probably automatically copyrighted.
Plenty of anime in college that probably was
not
kosher to watch.
I know I mentioned this before, but I think it's worth reinforcing. In an age where it feels like so many TV shows that become popular get stretched on past when they probably should last, this one I felt ended at pretty much the perfect time.
Right.
There's this kind of a steady progression, and they ended on their terms. They wrapped it up like at a reasonable place, and I thought it was a pretty satisfying ending.
That's
it never overstayed its welcome, and it's kind of a touching ending too. So I think it's worthwhile. It's a bit of a commitment at four seasons, but if you can get four or five episodes in and you're not hooked, it's probably safe to drop because you're probably never going to like it.
All right, what's our next category?
The next category, I believe, is books.
Yay, something I can talk about. But go ahead, Travis.
So I've read a lot of books, but most of them are not worthy of that much discourse. Although
drink.
Well, it's funny when I called into a group meeting at work and the manager wanted us to all give a fun fact about us as we went around the room. I was like, this is going to be terrible. But I logged into Goodreads to look it up. And so my fact got to, I said, since 2014, I've apparently read at least 68 books per year, which got a shocking gasp from the rest of the room full of software engineers who were probably reading like one book a year, maybe.
Oh, gosh.
Granted.
One book a year is pathetic.
Granted.
Sorry, sweetie.
Hey, I've read a book in the past decade.
Granted, anyone that does read my reading recaps on the site knows that, especially like last year, half of those books were graphic novels. But hey, reading's reading when most people are only reading websites and stuff.
Let me ask you real quick. When do you read?
So I usually read while I'm eating breakfast.
Okay.
And then like right before bed.
So
I try to read at work. That's usually where I read like nonfiction.
Okay.
Because for me, I don't know, I've had different opinions with people. Like, to me, it's easier to pick up and put down most nonfiction, at least the nonfiction I'm reading, because like either it's a topic I'm already pretty well versed in, so I'm almost reading it just as not really to learn anything, just to have something to read almost.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm trying to read something weightier, then yeah, it's harder to pick up and put down. But to me, once I'm starting to read fiction, I want to finish that chapter. I don't want to put it down halfway through a chapter.
So you're reading during times when you could be watching TV. You just I know this is going to sound dumb, but like you just choose to prioritize.
Correct, and that's what I said. I don't make it a priority to watch them.
I'm not trying to say you should be watching more TV.
Well, this past week or so, yes, I have actually been watching those Dice Tower videos while I'm eating breakfast, just because they had like a they're going through the Board Game Geek Top 100.
Mm-hmm.
So they made 11 of those videos. So I'm like, oh, I actually want to watch this. I don't want to stretch this out, kind of like I want to watch it while these rankings, because like apparently the rankings change so often that like he wrote them down the night before, and as he's doing it live, he's like, oh, these two games swapped overnight because of however the ranking system works. But so I have read other books, like actual books too, but the two that I was going to bring up was one for my book group at the library. It was just graphic novel book group. We read the 2016 reboot of Archie.
Oh yeah.
Which is not Riverdale. Like, Riverdale's a different reboot on the CW where Archie has sex with his teacher and things like that go on.
What?
Yeah, but that is a
are
messed
you kidding
up
me?
Show.
Yes, that actually happens.
That's
on...
That's not supposed to happen in
we Archie. Watched one episode of Riverdale and that, and we were like, yeah, this isn't Archie. Like,
this is not our Archie.
This is not our Archie.
That's disturbing.
Hashtag not my Archie.
So, but we read the first volume of this Archie. A lot of people had the same first impression as I did, where it's six issues. The first three were drawn, and this is going to make sense to none of the three of you because you don't read comics, but were drawn by a lady called Fiona Staples, who also does Saga, which is done by Brian K. Vaughan, who did Why the Last Man, Ex Machina, some other popular series. That I'm looking at Andrew because he's probably the only one that's heard of any of
those names. I've read a couple.
Her art is fantastic. It's a very far drop down to the other artists that do the remaining three issues. That was our first impression of like, man, if only she had done the rest of it. The big thing that was in Archie was half the people in the group hated it because they were like, I don't know what they were expecting from an Archie comic. Actually, there was, say, 10 people in the group. And the first question the librarian leading it said, so who here has actually read an Archie comic before? Me and one other guy raised our hands at this entire group. And we're like, well, we're the old guys, I guess, because we've read Archie.
Welcome to my territory.
And so, like, these other, like, millennials, I'll put that in the bad air quotes, they, like, hated on this book so much because they were like, why do they like Archie? And, like, these, like, basically, like, the fact that they expected it to be way more progressive than a comic named Archie is going to be. I was like, you know what? The first page has, like, people of color. It has girls with different colored hair, like, that's updated for Archie, trust me. But they're like, they needed like wall to wall, like updates and progressive elements. I was like, that's, then you're reading the wrong book. But there's a big scene in it where how Betty and Archie break up in this series. And I actually kind of landed on Archie's side, but I did not say that with that crowd. Because
how can you ever be on his side?
Can't say it in this Betty? Crowd either. Apparently.
Well, no, but I mean, they...
I'm sorry. Like, I haven't read this one, but like...
So if you... And I don't know how long we want to talk about the one thing, but like... So if you know Archie at all, like...
I know Archie.
Like, Betty is... She's not quite the tomboy, but she is... Like, she has tomboy, at least tomboy tendencies. Like, she plays sports. She doesn't... She can fix cars and stuff like that. Yeah, like, she's literally the girl next door. So somehow, it's really convoluted how in the book, some other girls convince her that, oh, boys don't like any of that, which is one of the things where some of the girls in the group, like, took offense that, like, a girl in a comic would say, like, oh, boys don't like girls that play sports and do all this stuff. We need to get you in a dress and do your hair and do all this stuff. And I'm like, this is like any 90s teen comedy movie kind of like, that's literally the plot of She's All That, isn't it?
Isn't or something that, like that. Isn't that kind of the opposite of Grease in a way? Or like, they try and convince her that he likes girls that smoke and wear leather jackets and whatnot. And no?
Am I completely misreading Grease? She goes and does that to herself at the end in order to win his affections or to fit in into his world. I mean,
but it's the same general idea of trying to be something you're not to appeal to the opposite gender.
And that was my point in this Betty and Archie thing was, so Betty goes through all this stuff and gets all dressed up and everything like that. And then they go on a date and like, it's not like, you know, he wants to like eat this like messy food that they always eat before. And she's like, no, I can't, because she'd mess up her dress and her nails and everything now. So then like he gets upset with her because she's changed. And apparently like, people in the book group with me like took offense that he would take offense at her for trying to change and not be the same. But I'm like, but he's in love with that version of the person that he fell in love with. He's happy with that. I can understand being like upset when somebody changes like that.
If I mean, unless the whole premise of the book has changed a lot, he's not in love with that version of her. He's seeing both Veronica and
in this reboot,
and Veronica is like completely.
So in this reboot, Veronica has not moved to town yet when this happens.
Okay.
And Betty and Archie apparently have been together since kindergarten. But it also seems like Archie doesn't really know that they're a couple. Because he's Archie. He doesn't really know what's going on at any moment in his life. But anyway, it certainly generated far more discussion than you would have expected an Archie comic to generate. So that was...
Santa's here.
Yeah. Yes.
Also, if you know the writer Mark Waid, he's way more known for doing like superhero comics, like straight up superhero comics. So the fact that he was doing an Archie comic seemed... It's like, wow, what is he really going to do? And it to me, it worked. The other comic that I just started reading that I actually have the first issue there for, but is a comic called Tomorrow by Peter Milligan, which Peter Milligan does some weird stuff.
He did Shade,
The Changing Man.
The book's over here. And when I saw this in your hands earlier with the cellist on the front page, I immediately started thinking Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, I mean, like the color palette looks a little bit similar like that. Yeah, the general premise is somehow, and it's only the first, although it's only five issues long, but somehow people are getting sick and dying from a computer virus from like their TV screens and video screens and everything like that. Somehow it's not affecting children. It's not quite clear like what exactly is going on. One of the main character who's playing the cello, like you said, I learned a new term. He is neural atypical.
Yeah.
Which I had not heard that term before, but I could pick up on it. Like that was kind of a fancy way of saying he's on the autism spectrum.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Which is odd when you Google neural atypical, it returns neural typical. And like has to give you the definition as the, like, basically it's the opposite inverse, not the opposite, the inverse. So it's only the first issue. It intrigued me enough that like I used to only read comics as trade paperbacks where they collect them with a spine and you get them all at once. Kind of the equivalent of binging. But I've kind of gotten back into getting monthly comics, and this one was intrigued me enough at the end where I wanted to see what's going to happen to these characters. And the art's pretty good. For those progressive people that were complaining about Archie, like, maybe there was a white person in this comic, but like the main character, I don't know what ethnicity they're supposed to be, but they're not white. The two silhouettes of kids, those are some black kids, and their dad is like a cybersecurity expert who is going to try to save them because they're separated at the beginning of the story now. So, you know, it kind of falls into a standard, some standard dystopia tropes. But
thank God we're progressive enough that we've reached a place where we've kept all those white people out of our comics.
That's why you read Archie and then you read this so you can get the...
So a fun thing about Archie, just to close that one out, is the number of times that I have over my lifetime gotten Archie confused with Bazooka Joe. I know they have very little in common, but the Bazooka Joe comics that you would eat in the Bazooka...
you didn't eat the comics! And you did. You didn't eat the gum either. You're doing both things wrong. I had probably at least a shoebox full of Bazooka Joe comics.
So is Archie the guy that ate the hamburgers, or is that Jughead?
That's Jughead.
Who also that's got all his, I know about. Who also got his own reboot series, which is not to me was not as good. The librarian loved the Jughead series more than Archie series. I didn't think it was as good.
Okay,
but yeah, Jughead is a different character.
Gotcha.
He's also not Bazooka Joe.
I'll segue to my books based on one of the other things you said. It's hard for you to pick up and put down fiction.
Okay.
So I am stuck in my reading time is very much scattered. It's like, okay, I can steal 5 minutes to read a little bit here, and then wife, kids, life comes along and interrupts me. And when that happens, I can't say, wait, I go to you at the end of the chapter. It's okay, I put this book down. And I'm reading mostly on my Kindle Paperwhite. So the Kindle Paperwhite has this fantastic feature where it tracks your position very easily. I don't have to worry about bookmarks. But it also tells you how much time it thinks you have left in the book. Mm-hmm. So before I went on my vacation, I was reading a book called Gentleman Joel and the Red Queen by Lois McMaster Bujold. And when I started my vacation, it said I had like 8 hours left in the book. And I sit down on my vacation and I'm on the beach and I'm watching the waves and I get half an hour to read uninterrupted without anybody coming by. I can actually just sit and read and flip pages. And then I get interrupted. And I look down and it says, okay, you have 42 minutes left. So that shows you just how frequently life interrupts, basically. Those interruptions cause my reading time to go up so, so much, which is one of the reasons why it is hard to find time to read sometimes.
Although that's weird, because like, isn't it only timing when you're actually reading?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you actually read, you're like, okay, I'll do this thing, you put the thing down, it's still open, or I close it, and it's...
Okay, so like, yeah, there's still some...
Then I close back up, and I got to go back paragraph and start reading, and then I get another distraction, but there's I have to move the page.
There's some residual time
expiring
when you're not actually reading it. Gotcha.
Exactly. Okay.
So, I have a Kindle Paperwhite. I've read maybe 2 books on it.
Yeah. Hit the technology, huh?
Well, I get so much from the library, and I'm, I guess, a Luddite enough. I haven't really learned how to download them to my Kindle.
Oh, I do that.
I know how to get them on my phone easily enough. But
it's definitely
a
lot easier on the phone than Kindle.
It's not
hard, but it's easier than on the phone, you know, if you want simplicity.
So, I mean, when you go to OverDrive, or do you use OverDrive or Libby?
Or Hoopla.
I like the interface of Libby better than just straight up OverDrive.
Okay, so, but when I hit, you know, like, once it's on and my loans, I hit get, and it takes me to Amazon. I hit the get the book, and it says, where do you want to send it on it? Okay. And I just go straight
I've
to
only used
book.
Libby on my phone, so Libby wants me to stay in the app, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, so for OverDrive, when I once it's in my checkouts, and I hit get Kindle book, it takes me to Amazon to actually send it to my Kindle. And I can send it to my phone if I want. But I never want to do that.
Okay, yeah, because there's...
No, reading on the phone is not my ideal either. My wife reads almost everything on her iPad, and I just can't understand how she can read on the backlit screen.
Yeah, I agree.
Although I spend most of my time reading on backlit screens on my computer. I read, to Paul's point, more news articles and web pages than I do books these days.
The book that you mentioned, well, who's the author?
Okay, so the book is Gentleman Joel and the Red Queen by Lois McMaster Bujold.
Is that a French person?
No.
How old is this book?
The book is actually fairly recent. I want to say it's 2016.
I don't understand why you like it, then. Continue.
So, Lois McMaster Bujold holds the record for most Hugo Awards ever won.
Wow. I've never heard of this person.
Yeah. She is quite prolific and very popular author. And this book is in her most famous and most popular series, which is the Vorkosigan series. The Vorkosigan series follows a family of aristocrats from a... planet that was bombed into a backwater state in an intergalactic war and was cut off from the rest of society and lived that way for about 200 years and has been reintegrating with galactic society ever since. And this character, the Red Queen, actually, she is coming from another planet and marries one of those aristocrats. And it's the story of her husband, their son, their other son who is a clone. And it gets complicated fast because it's space opera. And the books are fantastic, well-written, fantastic characters. And this is just the latest book in that series. The book isn't that great, but it's still the same characters and explained with a lot of the ideas. And it's an exposition of old age and loss after being widowed. So
old age and, yeah.
Mm.
But it's not like the ones that are the other ones are better. But I'm reading because it's a series I really like. It's a series my wife really likes. So the latest one comes out. I was like, okay, of course I'm going to read that. It's like the next movie in the series you really like comes out. And it's not a great movie in that series, but you're still going to watch it because you like the series. Mm. So I read that one. I also am reading right now by James Allen Gardner, All Those Explosions Were Somebody Else's Fault, which is a take on the superhero mythologies. We've had a lot of superhero movies, and so he likes to play around with these kinds of ideas. Superheroes are basically spawning as a result of basically demonic influence in this world, getting to a point where you have to have some sort of counterbalance, and they're coming and fighting back. I'm actually not too far in, so I don't know a whole lot, but I know that Gardner's writing style is really unique. He takes things, a simple enough story of good and evil, superheroes versus supervillains, and looks at it through a very weird angle to get a very interesting story out of it. And the last one to mention is that I am rereading, in the sense that I just finished rereading aloud to my children, The Hobbit. So they're old enough to have read The Hobbit, and it was a lot of fun reading it to them, and they had a lot of fun listening to it, which I'm really happy about, because as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, you know, this isn't all that kid-appropriate at times, and it's not as well-written as the Lord of the Rings. The quality is not necessarily there, and the story is complicated at times. I was really impressed with how Tolkien handles things that you don't see in modern fantasy. You know, the modern fantasy, you have the good guys and the bad guys, perhaps, and they're fighting over these things, and the good guys stay good. And the good guys in The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, especially The Hobbit, that's what I'm talking about here, they're good guys. It's not like Thorin Oakenshield is ever a bad guy, but he succumbs to greed. You know, Smaug's treasure has this incredible hold over him in a way that would not happen in most modern fantasies, I think, especially not for a juvenile audience.
So one question, you read The Hobbit, you said, yes, to your kids. And how old is your youngest?
My youngest is 6.
Did she follow it?
She was listening to it, but she didn't really follow as closely.
Because I was going to ask, we got the illustrated edition of the first Harry Potter book, and I tried reading it. And relative to the other books I was reading, those are long chapters.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Almost 5-year-old to sit through. So she didn't... Although she was the one that asked to read it again the next night. We got through 2 chapters and then they were asked for it again.
Yeah.
They flipped ahead and the illustrated edition has pictures. So she didn't like the picture of the goblins in Gringotts. And he didn't like the picture of them. They show Quirrell taking off the turban and the eye and the back of his head. He's like, I think personally, because he's probably wasn't expecting that, flipping through the book and he hits that page. He's like, whoa, what's that? So,
I was talking about The Hobbit and you're talking about Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I was just
making sure that I missed this segment somewhere.
But I asked because I'm guessing it's Tolkien. He has
they're very long
chapters. Yeah.
Yeah. My general rule is I'll read them a chapter a night for their bedtime story. And most of the time, that's fine. The book, sometimes there are longer chapters. It's 10, maybe 15 pages. I get to some of these chapters with Tolkien. It's 30, 45 pages. I'm like, oh, nope. We're going to find a nice little breaking point halfway through here.
Yeah. So I do listen to books, but what I meant to say was that I read a lot of young adult fiction. They're fast reads. Mm-hmm. They're fun. I have a few that I've read recently. One was called, and some of these might appeal to you guys, some won't, 10 Blind Dates. This one probably won't, but
sounds
it's
like your
basically
2000 movie pictures. Yeah,
basically. It's about basically a girl who gets broken up with right before the holidays, and she's staying with her grandparents. And her grandma decides, hey, you know how we're going to make you feel better? We're each going to come up with a blind date for you. And so over the course of the holidays, when she's staying with her family, they each come up with a blind date for her each night. And it's just like, it's amusing. It's like a fun short read. I really enjoyed it. The next one I wanted to mention was Highly Illogical Behavior, which is about agoraphobic boy and a girl who basically saw him have a breakdown at school, and like basically I think it was at the beginning of middle school or something he had it, and then he hasn't left his house for 3 years after. And she decides that in order to get into college, she's going to cure him.
Mm. Oh, right? Boy. This is going to go badly, huh?
And so, but it's interesting. It's an interesting byplay of their interactions and basically how she insinuates herself into his life mm-hmm. by first going about meeting his mother and then, you know, basically being like, here, give him this note from me. And then like showing up at his house and slowly and surely introducing her boyfriend to them too. And basically, she does manage to become very close with him as friends, and then he finds out about everything. Right. And but it's very well written. And it's very interesting. It's different from a lot of the books that I've read. Not to say really? That those aren't well written and interesting.
Is it like written kind of slanted towards one side or the other, like that she was wrong, without giving anything away, I guess, that she was wrong to do that, or?
There's, I guess it's told from three main characters' perspectives.
So did...
And one of them is the agoraphobic mm-hmm. boy, one's her boyfriend, and one's hers. And hers, you can see her perspective.
Right.
Her boyfriend's, he's definitely not on her side in terms of why she's doing this, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you want to help someone, but using it to get into college...
That seems to also be a common thing in young adult fiction, is having not even just first person, but multiple
perspectives.
Different first person yes. perspectives, which for something like, I think it was the first Divergent book, was like really mm-hmm. jarring to jump between the two perspectives.
Yeah. I mean, I see it a lot because I read a lot of yeah. those books and it doesn't bother me. And the third one's more in the fantasy vein. It's A Curse So Fierce and Lonely, about basically... Prince was, I don't know, he was cursed, and then, like, they've banned magic in this land, and his protector was able to escape into the U.S., basically, once a season to bring someone back to try and break the curse, right? And one season when he comes, he picks a girl to try and break the curse, who basically, the prince needs to get someone to fall in love with him, right? And he
Why
picks
that
a girl.
The solution?
I don't know.
Because love conquers everything.
Yeah.
It's like the fifth element.
True
yes.
Love, yeah. True love's kiss.
Well, yeah. So he picks this girl and he's about to
Act
go.
True love.
But this
Act
other girl love. Who's sees him and attacks him. She's like, hey, you can't kidnap that girl. Right. And basically in the byplay, she's the one who comes back. And then it takes place in this magical fantasy land. Where it's interesting.
I'm interested to see if Paul actually read anything.
Yeah, Paul, what book did you, what book did you read, Paul,
just
when you could have been watching television?
Just because I'm illiterate does not...
Hey, no. I am reading one of the books you said was your influential book, though.
Which one did you start with?
I started with Economics in One Lesson.
All right.
Although it seems to literally
Educate
be
yourself.
That. 3 pages of the lesson, yeah. 25 chapters of providing examples
yep.
of said lesson.
yeah. That's pretty accurate, and yet I still think it's worthwhile reading those examples, because you see
well,
how it applies.
Especially the broken window fallacy. Is like the main example, and then everything seems to be like,
and it helps you show like where it applies places you may not necessarily have expected yeah. to see it. But I actually have two examples. The first one is called Anti-Fragile by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, who
Very
I believe is a mathematician and an author. I don't know really what to. I've just started it. Haven't gotten that far into it. I don't really know what to expect from it. I've seen it highly recommended by various investors and economists that I kind of follow on Twitter and social media. And so it seems like it's something worth reading. The basic idea seems to be that, so everyone knows what fragile means. It means that, you know, when there's shocks to the system or when something happens to it, it'll break. A lot of people think that the opposite of fragile would be like resilient. Mm-hmm. So like concrete or something, when you hit it, it doesn't break. And the
you
point
just
of the,
have to hit harder.
Yes, you have to hit harder. The point of the book seems to be that, no, that's not true. The opposite of fragile isn't resilient. The opposite of fragile is da-da-da-da-da, anti-fragile, mm-hmm. where when something gets jarred or damaged, it becomes stronger. Because the thing with concrete, like to your point, is if it gets hit hard enough, it's just going to like break apart. It doesn't get better with this kind of damage. So I don't know what a great example of it would be. Maybe muscles, where the whole point of a muscle is that you do little tiny microfractures or whatever to your ligaments, and they get stronger over time. And presumably, I'll read about more examples of it.
Wait, so it has to be something that when it gets hurt, it gets stronger, you said?
The idea is adversity makes it stronger.
Otherwise, I was going to say the best example would be water, because you can't
break it. Damage it. No, it's the point.
But it's a different point than that.
Yeah, it's not that water would be resilient in that case, I think, because it doesn't get damaged by adversity or whatever.
Okay. The two most important factors for anti-fragility are growth. Mm-hmm. In the face of adversity, but also this malleability, where you do have to be able to be really flexible. You can't be rigid in thought or practice, because that does lead to tendencies to where, okay, this has been working all along, but then the new system, the thing comes up, the black swan, and you're no longer resilient. You are still fragile because you never projected this kind of thing. You have to be prepared for essentially any eventuality.
And most of the concepts seem to be focused on kind of like the economy as a whole, or how society is structured. The idea being that we're too focused on making things, kids and the economy and society resilient to where like they don't like get damaged by things. So maybe kids would be a good example. And Andrew, feel free to jump in and correct me, because I'm kind of speculating a little bit based on the first couple chapters, but it seems like we're too focused on making sure that that harm doesn't come to them. And instead we should be maybe not welcoming harm, but like teaching them to like,
the right levels of harm. You do want to be protective against harm, but there's okay, I need to set up a space where you can fail safely.
Yeah, exactly. You need a certain level of failure so that kids will learn from the failure and grow from it, basically.
And know that while you have their back, that you're not going to be there to necessarily pick them up from everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, why do we fall, Bruce? So we can get back up, kind of thing.
That's kind of, I just finished reading the book. Sometimes you win, sometimes you learn.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, it has lose, but it's crossed out to say learn. It's the similar concept of you need to fail and learn from it. Just simply failing is not useful enough.
I'll be honest, I'm not sure I will finish this book. It's been a bit of a slog so far, because it seems like, I'm not sure how I feel about Tlaib as a writer. It seems like he's overly focused on lobbing grenades at other people. Like, he'll make a point, and then he'll spend a long time talking about how, like, other people are idiots because they don't understand what he's saying, and they believe bad things. And I'm like, I don't care, dude. Like, just try and make your point. Like, quit trying to, like, tear everyone else down. Maybe that's just the intro, and he'll get better as it goes on. But I tried looking at his Twitter stream, and he seems to be the exact same on Twitter here. He's just basically lobbing grenades at everybody.
I don't
think
you're gonna see many changes there.
So we'll see. I mean, I'm hopeful to get something out of it, even if I don't finish it. But that's currently what I'm reading. The second thing is much similar to Andrew. I've been reading as a bedtime story to my daughters the I guess Dealing with Dragons Quadrology. I'm not sure what the name of it is.
I did that a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite series of books as a child. It's by Patricia C. Reedy, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's a series of four books, Dealing with Dragons, Searching for Dragons, I think Talking to Dragons, and Calling on Dragons. I'm not sure I got the order right.
It's also called The Enchanted Forest Quadrology.
Yeah, that's a better name for it. Thank you. We finished Dealing with Dragons, and we're probably more than halfway through Searching for Dragons right now. And they seem to be enjoying it, go a chapter at a time, or in the case of a particularly long chapter, sometimes just half a chapter. It's kind of the story of a princess named Cimmerine who is not proper and basically does all the wrong things. She's not content to just do princessy things and wait for a prince to come rescue her or whatever. And she decides to run away and become the princess to a dragon, which is, again, an improper thing. You do not volunteer to become a dragon's princess.
You can be a dragon's princess, but you have to be captured.
Yeah, and then when you're captured, you're supposed to do it solely so that you get rescued by a prince and get married. And she, of course, has no desire to do that.
The suitors come and she sends them away.
Yeah, a lot of the books are just about basically taking fairy tale tropes and turning them on their heads.
I was going to say that, I mean, Shrek probably lifted from this. It sounds somewhat similar to Shrek. But like I said, they're both taking... Right. Fairy tales and turning off.
But you'll see things like there's in Searching for Dragons, there's a reference to like Jack and the Beanstalk and how they're like, oh god, these jacks keep on coming and like stealing my geese and whatnot, or and stuff like that. Or Rumpelstiltskin at some point, and he's like, man, I've got so many kids now. It's just hard to keep all these mouths full.
There is a series of illustrated books where they try to tell the stories from the other side.
Yeah.
They tell like Jack and the Beanstalk from the giant or... Yeah, I think Three Little Pigs from the wolf's perspective or something.
It's not a terribly innovative thing because you have Maleficent and stuff like that as well.
It was more innovative when these books were written.
Right. All things I'm listing are like, have probably had something like this as an influence.
I'll also say a lot of things you're talking about are more picture books or basic stuff. Yeah. This is juvenile literature, so it's for 6th to 8th grade kind of range. It's not YA specifically, but a little bit younger. And also, as the series progresses, there's plenty of what Paul is talking about, but it also builds on its own narrative and has a grander picture in the long run as well, where Cimarron and her family, they have their own narrative rather than just being in this world.
Cimarron sounds very familiar. So
Cimmerillion?
No. I'm wondering if I maybe read one of these books like way back.
Mindenbar, Telemann?
I don't know.
Kazul?
It just sounds very familiar.
So after reading them, the quadrology, the next book that I read to them was...
So you read the Chain of Forest quadrology to your kids?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I read them. The next one was Howl's Moving Castle.
Okay.
And so the funny thing was that my daughters were yelling at me that I was reading Howl from Howl's Moving Castle in the same voice that I read Telemann's lines.
Really? How was your Telemann voice?
I can't do it, but I mean...
Was it British?
No, it's... Okay. It was Haughty Wizard.
Okay. Yeah.
So we got another haughty wizard. I'm going to build a haughty wizard voice. Dad, that's Telemann's voice.
I don't.
Dad, you're using your Telemann voice again.
I don't see very strong voices, but I do. Sometimes I change my inflections a little bit. Like if there's a giant, I'll go do a deeper voice or something.
I like doing that too. Except for then, like if you miss it, and you're like, oh, that was a different character talking. Yep. Oops.
It's hard sometimes when there's a dialogue and it's like she said, and like, oh crap, that was,
yeah.
She just said ho ho ho. Hi there. Wait, that's not right. So yeah, it's tough.
It does help when you know the material, but even then I make mistakes like that. And it's like, all right, we'll go with this one. I'm reading them as having finished The Hobbit, we are reading The Alchemist, the Nicholas Flamel books, the first one in that. And it's the description of Nicholas Flamel is an unplaced accent, and you find out that's mostly because he's from France, goes to England. Somehow he ended up with this quasi-Scottish accent that I'm using on him. And then we go and we meet Skaia, who's called Skadi in this book. And Skaia is Irish. And I'm like, oh boy. How am I going to... I already have a hard enough time doing... jump from Irish to Scottish accents, and it's miserable. Fortunately, the kids don't care. But it's upsetting to me.
So I hear reading to your kids is miserable.
I enjoy it because it's a challenge. Yeah. But it's only a challenge because I make it so. You know, I think they wouldn't care. As long as I'm reading something, they're happy.
So Travis, do you have any time to play games? Or is it all taken up with reading books?
So, no. Most of the time I spend with my son right now is playing board games. So we've played a lot of the classic things. One that we got recently, we moved closer to our local game store, which is like right next to our grocery store and our liquor store, which is a bad place for my game store to be, right near places I'm there every week.
That's a party.
So one game that they had gotten sold, they bought when I was not there. The game store sold them on this game as it's like kind of like Ticket to Ride. It's a game called Trekking the National Parks.
Hmm.
And I can definitely see where the guy sold it to them as that, where like some of the mechanics are the same of like five up face up cards that you can draw or draw from the top. The cool thing about it is the cards have numbers and colors. The numbers are used to move around the board. The colors are used to claim each of the perks on the board. So when you pick up a card, you can either pick it up for the number or the color or maybe both. Or so. I kind of like it because if you're collecting for a park and then somebody else steals the park, at least you still have the numbers to use from that. There's multiple point systems going on because you can collect parks, you can collect tokens. There's a little bit of like you can battle people for position on the board a little bit. And just looking at like the cards are like 4x6 photo cards, so like you actually get a photo of the park and some a sentence or two description of it when on it, which I read until like we're kind of like, yeah, okay, we've read this card 10 times now. I don't think I need to read about this park anymore, although apparently we need to go to Glacier National Park because the card claims it'll be gone by 2030.
Is that in Alaska?
Is it Alaska? It's obviously somewhere in Alaska or Montana. I think it's in Montana.
It's not Hawaii.
No. Although you can claim Hawaii as a major park in the game, which you get bonus actions for if you claim the major parks, which everybody can claim. But yeah, it's a nice, it's similar enough to Ticket to Ride that it grabbed my son's attention. It's different enough that I like to play it to get a break from just putting trains on the same maps. The other game I actually brought with me here, it's on the table. It's because
good for an audio podcast.
Yes, but it's called D&D Dungeon Mayhem, which so I went into the store asking about a game called Unmatched, which apparently is a redoing of a Star Wars game of some kind. But the concept of the Unmatched is they have all these like characters like Sinbad, Medusa, and Robin Hood, and you can battle them on a board. I liked it because one of the characters they're going to come out with is Bruce Lee. But I was worried that it might be too complicated for an 8-year-old to play, so the guy recommended this game, which literally says 8+, I think, maybe on it. But yes, it's D&D. With this pack, you get a barbarian, a paladin, a rogue, or a wizard. They each have their own separate deck of cards, but it's very simple to play. There's like 4 different icons. Basically, draw a card, you play a card, maybe you get to play more cards. You have 10 hit points, and you're just seeing who can kill everybody else. But yes, yeah, so we've only played a couple of games. I literally just played it this morning. Played 3 games. It seems pretty fun. The game store guy claimed that he sold more copies of this game than any other game he's ever had in the store. I'm sure a $15 price point doesn't hurt that either, because you basically get like 4 unique decks of cards. There's an addition for it where you can get a bigger box of 8 monsters that also has slots for all the different decks you can accumulate. I think they only have 1 other pack out right now, which is 2 characters from Baldur's Gate. Never having played Baldur's Gate, that's not totally appealing to me, but if we like the game, then hey, it's 2 more characters to play in the game. And I don't know if this is any way... It has D&D on it. Sure, they use the character classes, but this could have just been any generic fantasy setting on it. But yeah, it plays super fast. Like, there's all sorts of rules for getting more cards. Like, if you finish a round with no cards, you draw 2 more. So at the beginning of the next turn, you're going to be guaranteed to have 3 cards in your hand because you draw. So yeah, so it's a lighter game, obviously, because it's 8 and up. But yeah, it was fun.
Cool.
Andrew,
we're looking at you. All right, I'll go on with my game then. I want to talk about Cardpocalypse. Cardpocalypse is a video game.
Is that the game that you finished first on trueachievements.com?
Yes.
I was going to ask you.
It's a game I've been playing a lot recently.
Apparently.
But Cardpocalypse is available on Xbox, on PlayStation 4, on iOS, and on Steam. It might be available elsewhere, but I know those 4 for sure. It is a narrative card battling game. So the story is you've got 10-year-old Jess, who's just moved to a new area, is going into a new school. And there's the favorite TV show on this time. The time period is the 1990s. And it's Mega Mutant Power Pets. And she goes into school, and the entire school loves Mega Mutant Power Pets and plays the card game based on the TV show. And that's how she makes friends and interacts with everybody, except that on her very first day in the school, she manages to get into a fight. And as a result of the fight, the card game is banned. And she is now the least popular girl in school. And so it's a story of childhood and being in a new school, and Jess also has a disability. She's in a wheelchair. But it's also, how am I going to play this game that everyone loves on the down low when the teachers aren't paying attention? And why are the things happening that are happening where playing the game actually is starting to change things significantly? So as in that mystical element as well, while just still being a pretty fun card game. If you've played card battling games, it's going to play very familiarly. There's defending cards, hiding cards, cards get stronger, cards get weaker, interaction cards. But it's both simple enough to grasp quickly for people who haven't played it, and deep enough to be interesting, at least a little bit, against a pretty bad AI. And you play a card battle game against an AI, you're going to win most of the time. That's okay. It's single player. You want to get through the story. But then you start changing the rules, and then it gets crazy. So when you can change the rules in the game, as you do throughout it, you can change it in a lot of different ways, which does give the game some interesting replayability, because you can change one rule set one playthrough and a different rule set a different playthrough, and the game plays differently as a result. Completing all the achievements required me to play it 4 times, and I am the only person at this point on True Achievements who's done it, the only person who's beaten the game on Xbox as well, although people have beaten it on PlayStation and probably on iOS and Steam already.
Congratulations.
Yay! But it's a lot of fun. It's a high price game, but That's really good. It's an indie game. The developers, Gamebryno, made Guild of Dungeoneering. That was their previous game. It's another really fun card-style game that has really cool mechanics that play off each other in ways you wouldn't expect. But if card battling games are your thing, this one is definitely worth checking out.
Considering you played it four times, or beat it four times, I hope it was fun.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it. I like weird stuff.
So. Yeah, that's definitely true.
I have a lot of games written down, and I know that we don't want to go over too many of them.
we're an hour and 20 minutes in, you said?
So yeah.
Had something that we thought would be 30 minutes, but that's...
Yeah, so this has definitely been a lot longer than expected.
I didn't realize we'd talk this much about Archie, to be honest.
Nobody.
I would have given really good odds that we would not have spent like 20 minutes discussing Archie.
Well, so... Point Salad is the first one I was going to talk about, which is a light card game, and it's kind of very fun, easy, fast to play. The cards come out in three piles, and on one side of the card is scoring mechanisms, right? So it's like, oh, every lettuce you have is worth a point. And the next one might say, oh, every lettuce you have is -2 points, but every onion you have is 5 points. Or the third, and the next one might say, oh, every lettuce and pepper combination you have is worth 5 points. So you can take one of those scoring cards, or in addition to the face down pile, there's two cards that are face up, which are vegetables. So you could take two of the face up vegetables or take a scoring card, right? And if you take the face up veggies, then the scoring cards flip over, so the next person gets different scoring cards. So you can block them from getting those scoring cards by doing that. So if you see someone has 8 of one vegetable, you don't want to give them the one which is like, oh, for the most of this vegetable, you get 7 points, right? And then, so, I mean, it's a really quick, easy, fast play. It's good for kids, good for adults. I've played a lot at the game store recently because a lot of my friends have purchased it. We don't actually have it. That's the first one.
Okay.
The next one is Hanabi. We have actually been playing it again a lot recently, partially because I introduced it to Talia and she really liked it. Have you guys played Hanabi before?
Only watched you guys
You've
play.
You've seen it.
So what's weird is, I don't know if mine has a different name on it, but yours guys' is called Deluxe Hanabi or Hanabi and has tiles. I have a card game version.
The same card game.
Right, but how you guys describe you play the tile game, you could not do that with the card game at all.
You can flip them over still, but you can't like move them back and forth to memorize. Like,
yeah, how you guys strategize.
It helps. The tiles make it a lot easier, I think. Yeah. Otherwise, there's a lot more memory involved. But the idea here in Hanabi is that you guys are building fireworks to put on a show for, I think, the Emperor. I'm not positive about that part of the backstory. But essentially, you don't see your own cards or tiles. You see everyone else's. And you have to give each other clues saying, oh, these are all of your threes or fives. But the idea being that you have to want you want to build each firework, 1 through 5, in order.
Each firework's a different color.
Each firework is a different color. And so you want to go 1 through 5 in order. If you play it out of order, then you explode. if you explode too many times... Game's over. It's a cooperative game.
Much like in real life, you explode too many times.
Yes.
Game over, man. Game over.
Yeah. And your score is how many of those you played.
And what's our high score?
30.
Yeah, we've done it a couple times, haven't we?
Yeah.
Humble brag.
I mean, we play with the wilds put in to make it a little more difficult. So there's one that it matches any color. So even when someone gives you a clue saying, hey, this is your only green... You don't know if it's really green. You don't know if it's really playable. That's an interesting
twist that normally wilds help. How wilds hurt.
Oh, no, these are wilds hurt.
Right, but it's an interesting concept to have wilds hurt you.
Because they don't play into the other piles. They play as their own still. I tried Ticket to Ride Pennsylvania, and I don't know if you want me to say anything about it, because you also talked about wanting to have a Ticket to Ride podcast.
Sure, you can talk about it.
I mean, so if you've played Ticket to Ride...
It's the flip side of the UK map, right?
Yeah. So in Pennsylvania, when you build a route, you can pick a stock based on what that route says, which stocks it allows you to claim. Whoever has the most of each set of stocks gets points based on it. Now, some stocks, there's only like 2 cards for. Some, there's 15 cards for. If you have the most in the one that's got 15 cards, you get 30 bonus points. Right?
Seems pretty good.
Yeah, it is. So it's interesting because then it comes into, well, do I really want to focus on building my routes for my destinations, or do I want to build all these like little one-length trains and grab stocks?
Why did they choose Pennsylvania of all the states?
I don't know.
And stocks. That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know why they picked Pennsylvania for the map.
It has a lot of trains in it. I mean, you want to have something that's historically accurate, so the East Coast is probably going to be your best bet. And Pennsylvania is a big enough state on the East Coast.
Because that was my, I think I asked that question about how did they pick the cities for any ticket to ride, honestly, but especially like United States, were these all actual rail hubs or what?
I think they're probably just large cities that were positioned well.
I think they were supposed to be actual cities in 1904, which is when the game was supposed to be based.
Okay.
And if they were actual cities in 1904, they were rail hubs.
Yeah,
probably.
Speaking of ticket, we just did get the 1910 expansion for the US, which makes it a whole lot better. Because I had even noticed,
I like the bigger cards,
but also, like, we had even noted, like, gee, there's no destinations that go to, like, Las Vegas or St. Louis or Charleston, or, like, why are these cities on the map? And I was like, I hope the expansion, let's get the expansion, because I hope it has them on there.
Yeah. So. It's good. I'll stop there. I have a few more written down, but I'll let you go.
Okay. I got mostly video games, which is weird because I do play a lot of board games, but recently there was a deal on Game Pass. That's Ultimate Game Pass? I don't know what it's called.
Game Pass Ultimate is for both console and PC.
Yeah, whatever it is. Anyway, I've got access to a bunch of video games, and so I'm like, I might as well take advantage of this while I've got it until like 2021 or whatever. And so,
thanks, Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, first one is Gears of War 5, also known as Gears 5 now. I think they got rid of the of War. Don't have much to say about it. It is your stereotypical Gears of War game. The plot is meh.
Gives you an instant headache.
If you're my wife, it gives you an instant headache.
Is there a reason they dropped the of War? Is it just because people called it Gears and they said, why have the extra words if no one uses them?
Okay. I suppose it's kind of interesting that the main character is female. I mean, for a long time, Marcus Fenix was the main character in Gears of War, and now it's Kate. And there is some kind of interesting twist, but it's still kind of a Gears plot where at the end you're left scratching your head thinking, wait, why is this going on? So it's...
Do you still have chainsaws on guns?
Yes, there are still chainsaws on guns.
Still have speakers in your chest?
Speakers in your chest?
Paralyze was a thing. I don't know. I don't play Gears.
Okay.
To me, Gears is all about just running around and killing things.
Well, yeah,
and being
most games
red
are about.
And bloody. And,
no, that's not the kind of games I play.
That's not the kind of game that I like.
The kind of game I play, I run around and do card battles with other kids.
Listen, I didn't go around judging you all when you were naming your Archie comic
You
books
made the statement that all games were about running around and killing things.
Well, you know,
all
I don't
the good
like
ones
Gears.
Are.
And my question has just been, how much have they tried to change it?
Oh, none at all.
Yeah, okay.
So, what about the microtransactions? Are they a change?
Are they different from earlier?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
I don't know. Maybe. I never focus on that that much. I mean, there are new multiplayer types of games. That's where they put most of the innovation, quote unquote. But it's still fun. I'm
still
enjoying
Horde mode.
Still Horde mode.
Yeah.
But there's also like an escape mode and other things. So I've been playing that. I started playing Metro Exodus. Metro is a, I don't know how well known it is. It's based on a novel, I believe, or a series
of novels.
Sort of by a Russian author.
Russia.
Yeah. And the
very
main,
bleak.
Very what?
Russians. Very bleak.
Oh, yeah, very bleak, yeah. The storyline is basically that it's a post-apocalyptic, the nuclear war, I assume is nuclear war, and it's all based in Russia, and humanity has been forced underground into metro tunnels and whatnot, and the above ground is radioactive and everything. This version is a little bit more open world, which generally I don't like, and true to form, I have not been enjoying this one as much. I don't know if I'll continue playing it, but it's definitely very, really well polished. And there's the character models are really good. The dialogue's really good. There's a lot of story there. I'm enjoying the story. I'm just kind of hating the whole like going out and open world gameplay. So we'll see.
Which is definitely something that's changed in our life cycle of playing games, right? Because we used to play tons of open world games.
I've always kind of preferred a driving narrative, like to push me, like the BioWare types of games, where generally there's a story driving you from plant to planet.
We also played a lot of Borderlands.
Yeah, there was a lot of Borderlands. And the last one that I've got, where is it? Oh, Indivisible. It is a it's kind of hard to describe.
It's kind of a side scroller that also has elements of tactical combat involved, time-based, turn-based, maybe ATB. Tactical combat. Whatever you just said.
Active time battle.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy style.
Sure. Yeah. Kind of, I guess later Final Fantasies. Yeah. Where they've got your timer bars, replenishes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's the gameplay is just okay. And I kind of wish they explained a little bit more. They just kind of throw information at you and expect you to kind of pick up on it. But it's got a ton of personality. Love the characters. It's mostly fantasy based, but it also seems to be kind of Indian based. The main character is Ajna, and, there are like other characters who seem vaguely Indian-ish. But there's a fire witch, Rakshmi or Ram? I don't know. She's hilarious. Like everything she says is just hilarious. And it's just a lot of fun playing, even if sometimes gameplay is a little frustrating.
How much backtracking have you had to do?
Backtracking? None yet, but there's definitely been times where I'm like, I can't get through this wall. I'm assuming I need to get some sort of powered up axe to get through the wall that I will get later, and then I leave the level and never having gotten the power to backs. And I assume that maybe I'll get it and backtrack later,
But
there seems to be no option to backtrack yet.
Okay, so you're still fairly early in the game.
Yes, I think I'm still fairly early in the game. And there's also, again, the plot's a little weird, like things don't quite make sense, but well, whatever. I guess it's just new age games. Plots don't make sense. Or I'm old.
Yes. One of the two. Welcome to my land.
Well, not that old.
He's not the playing cards with little girls in a video game yet level.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It sounded really creepy. That sounded very creepy. Yeah.
On that note, I hope you enjoyed this. Hope you found something that you might be entertaining for you in terms of music, books, movies, TV, whatever else we talked about. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You have a Discord channel at discord.io/rampantdiscourse. Follow us on Twitter at rampantdisc. We have a Facebook page. You can go to rampantdiscourse.com. Find us pretty much anywhere. And with that, can't stop the discourse.